Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. It is hour number two, bright and early on this Monday morning to start off a new week here on TEL. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Two more hours to go to start this new week up until 11 a.m. Eastern time here on the grid. In hour two, we get you caught up on the weekend that was in Major League Baseball. We will also set the stage for where the Stanley Cup Final is at this current juncture. After two games and a double overtime thriller in game number two. Both of our first two games in this Cup Final rematch between Florida and Edmonton have seen at least one extra session. Friday night, we saw two OTs. We get ready for game three in Sunrise on this Monday. And the coach, J.Y. James Young, will join us later on in this second hour, DRS, to react to OKC winning by 16 in game two of the NBA Finals. And how close the Thunder might be to be hoisting that Larry O'Brien trophy as an NBA champion. All that, plenty more here in this second hour.
Yeah, some Major League Baseball to talk about as well. But also, it feels like we haven't watched a hockey game in 3 weeks at this point as well. Just a long weekend with a lot of opportunities to cash in for professional sports. And they sort of passed the buck over because let it be known, those first two games were absolutely sensational. In hockey, no better way to extend those ratings and get people excited by taking extra days off. Congratulations, NHL and NBA. You played yourself.
It just feels like a weird structure all around, DRS. There wasn't a game on Saturday with two championship series, two finals. Correct. There were no games on Saturday night. Some league could have started earlier to have that game on a Saturday and thus see it on a Sunday. Seems like rather poor planning between those two sides. You could understand, of course, with the NHL playing a game on Friday night with only one day off between game one and game two. They're not going to turn it around for game three on a Saturday. But the NBA started on Thursday, two full games off to play on a Sunday, maybe a more desirable primetime window on a Sunday night instead of a Saturday. I'm not entirely sure. Just kind of a weird structure there. Let's talk some Major League Baseball, though, from the weekend that was DRS. We saw four series sweeps. The Giants pulling off a sweep against the Atlanta Braves. That fork now firmly in Atlanta. All three wins, by the way, for SF by a single run. Five straight wins for San Francisco by just a single run. The Mets go to Colorado and sweep the Rockies. That's what we expect. The Reds, a sweep of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who had just beaten the Atlanta Braves in a midweek set to try to turn things around. Not a great sign for the Snakes. I would probably say, though, DRS, the most shocking sweep of the weekend, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Taking all three games against the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah, and it's shocking in respect because it's like, okay, we don't expect much out of Pittsburgh and the Phillies are a better team. Understand that. But when the Phillies go real bad, they go real bad, just like the Atlanta Braves. And the fact of the matter, Ben, it wasn't as if it was like, okay, well, 7-1, 7-1, 7-1. Boy, they weren't competitive here. They got great starting pitching all the way through this series, and the at-bats were horrendous. The Phillies even reached down and went and brought Otto Kemp up, who's having a very good minor league season, but also understand this. Here's what I love. Like, Otto Kemp is the 24th best prospect in the Phillies organization. That's who you're reaching down for to give an offensive jolt to this lifeless team right now, who now has Bryce Harper on the IL. They're in a bad way. It almost feels like it's Trey Turner hitting, and then Schwarber start the hit, and then nobody hits, and then they sort of wait around. But the pitching has never been the issue here. Maybe some bullpen where it's like, guys, come on. Hold down the fort in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. Just give us a couple zeros. But it doesn't matter. You know, like, if your bullpen's going to give up one earned run a game, it's like, okay, that's not bad. Well, your offense doesn't get anything against the opposing team's bullpen ever. That's an issue. They're really bad right now. So, yes, Paul Skeens dominating yesterday, no surprise. What was more of a surprise is the fact that the Pirates actually got key hits when they never get key hits either.
DRS, Paul Skeens was dominant once again. He has been incredibly dominant in his last six outings for Pittsburgh and yet did not record the win yesterday. A no decision. So Skeens' record overall still sub 500. It's 4-6, but the ERA continues to plummet. That's a good thing when it comes to the ERA numbers. It's now a 1.88 ERA. In the last six starts for Skeens, he has allowed a total of four earned runs, never more than a single earned run in any of those six starts. A run was scored against Skeens when he was on the bump or while he was in the game. Not an earned run, though, credited to Skeens. And again, DRS, in this six-start span, 45 strikeouts with at least six in all of those six. He has had at least seven in each of his last five consecutively. So the Pittsburgh Pirates get a win with Paul Skeens on the bump. They've won three of the last four that Skeens has started. The Philadelphia Phillies, though, after the Mets pull off a sweep against the Colorado Rockies, as we would anticipate, have opened up a 4.5 game advantage atop the National League East, 42-24. The Mets have the best record in the National League. Speaking of that NL East, DRS, the Braves have dropped seven consecutive games. They have lost eight of their last 10. Atlanta now a full 10 games sub 500, 27-37. 2 weeks ago, we placed the Braves firmly on fork watch. I think that fork is firmly in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, and their offense certainly has been just, you know, equally as bad as if you want to look at the Philadelphia Phillies on this losing streak right now. One against the Sox, three against the Diamondbacks, one against the Diamondbacks. Then they have a big lead and they lose 11-10 on getaway day against the Diamondbacks. Then go out to the West Coast, four runs, two runs, three runs. That's not good enough. And a majority of those games here lately, they've had leads in those games and they just can't close the door. Spencer Strider now 0-5 on the season. He wasn't terrible yesterday. Six innings pitched and three earned runs, but that offense is not bailing anybody out. The Braves say they're not going to be sellers outside of Ozuna because the majority of that lineup is young and talented and really locked up on longer-term team-friendly deals, which isn't a great sign. So if your move is, well, maybe we'll get rid of Ozuna, that doesn't help your pitching staff. That doesn't help the bullpen. That doesn't help that dead lineup with players like Matt Olson who really need to step up and aren't doing that here. We thought they were going to get a shot in their arm. Hey, look, playing better baseball. Strider's back. Acuna's back. It's going the opposite direction, which is something I don't think anybody saw coming.
Opposite direction for the D-backs as well in that critical series against Atlanta, sweeping the Braves. They got swept by Cincinnati this weekend by the Reds. A rivalry this weekend, Red Sox-Yankees, first time in the 2025 MLB campaign. High-scoring finale last night on Sunday Night Baseball up in the Bronx. The Red Sox winning it to take the series in that rubber match, 11-7. The final last night, DRS, five total home runs hit by Boston, despite two home runs individually for Aaron Judge and four ribbies in the game. Boston wins it 11-7. The Red Sox take the set over the weekend against the Yanks.
Yeah, Yanks left eight men on base yesterday, only 1-5 with runners in scoring position, still played at seven runs. You would have told me before the game, Carlos Rodon's on the mound here, and the Yankees get seven. That's an easy victory once again for the Red Sox. But they woke up yesterday, and including a lot of home runs, as you say. But the one guy also hitting home runs left and right, boy, it's Aaron Judge, continues to be absolutely sensational. Has a couple home runs yesterday. Average now sits right back at 396 in the month of June. Yeah. That's incredible.
Big Dumper can't be stopped out there in Seattle. He's got 26 long balls. That's Cal Raleigh to lead all of MLB. But Aaron Judge tied along Shohei Ohtani for the second most in the bigs with 23 home runs now. Speaking of Seattle, they needed not just Big Dumper this weekend, but George Kirby yesterday to avoid a sweep against the LA Angels and to stop a five-game skid for the Mariners. George Kirby fans 14 yesterday, DRS, as the Mariners get back into the win column. They're 33-31, but the Mariners now trailing the Astros by a few games in the American League West.
Yeah, they got to buy into some of these pitchers getting back and getting healthy, and that's a great start there for George Kirby. And you said the strikeout numbers were there, 14. How about yesterday? Like, this game ended 3-2. What if I would have told you the Seattle Mariners went 4 of 16 with runners in scoring position, which means, like, man, they probably could have scored 10 runs. The Angels scored two runs, Ben. They didn't have a single player get to second base. How about that?
It is rather ridiculous, DRS.
SportsGrid.com. DraftKings.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Behind 14 strikeouts from George Kirby, the Mariners snap a five-game losing skid and avoid a sweep against the Halos yesterday out in the Northwest. DRS, when you look at Seattle and where things stand now, or the game was actually in Anaheim, but when you look where things are for the Mariners, they entered their series starting on May 22nd against their divisional foes from the American League West in the Stros at 28-20. Houston was 25-24, just a game above 500. Seattle had a 3.5-game lead. They have lost 11 of their next 16, but did avoid the sweep yesterday against LA. Houston has won 11 of 15, unable to pull off a sweep against the Cleveland Guardians yesterday. And now it's a 2.5-game lead for Houston over Seattle in the American League West. Nobody running away with this division. It really seems to be a two-team race at the moment, but it has not been a kind last 3 weeks or so to the Mariners.
No, it certainly hasn't, because the offense that you'll be relying on, like, wow, looks really good there. And Cal Raleigh's still been absolutely fantastic, but some of the other guys have cooled. But also, you're starting to get some guys back in that starting lineup, particularly that starting rotation, that might be able to help you. And what's the best case scenario? As you just said, the Mariners aren't 6.5, 7.5, 8.5 games back. They're 2.5 games back of the Houston Astros. So striking distance, still certainly possible. We think the Angels aren't a good baseball team and sooner or later going to drop to the bottom. You take a look at their last 10 games, 5-5, lost their last game 30-34, under 500. The Athletics, who've woken up a little bit there out of that absolute slumber they've been going on for the past month, but those two teams relatively out of the picture. The other team that you'd worry about is the Rangers, so talented and under 500. When are they are going to actually wake up is the question here. But the Astros also, from a perspective where they still do have some talent, Isak Paredes finally starting to hit here, Alvarez should be coming back sooner than later. That's a team that you probably want to watch out for, because they have the pedigree as an organization of winning the division and winning World Series here. So I want to focus on the Mariners. I like what they do, but I feel like, aren't they just going to slip back and do the same things they always do? Hey, good young pitching, just can't hit anymore. Cal Raleigh was on fire. Now he's ice cold, and we can't get out of our own way. So the trustability factor, the word I like to use for the Mariners, they got to prove it to me. I can't just give it to them.
The Rangers still four games below 500 DRS, 31-35, but did take 2 of 3, winning the weekend in D.C. against the Nationals. Of course, Texas was a trendy pick to be the top team in this division, a changing of the landscape within the American League West, and maybe contend for that top spot in the AL. The Yanks still the favorites despite losing the weekend against the Sox, but the best record in the American League and the best record in Major League Baseball remains in Detroit. The Tigers 43-24. Jack Flaherty and the Tigers blanking Chicago yesterday in Motown. They beat the Cubbies in 2 of 3 this weekend. How about Jackie Cags? Jack Caglione yesterday in his sixth career MLB game goes a perfect 4 of 4 at the dish. His Royals played 7, beat the White Sox 7-5 DRS yesterday in their series to avoid a sweep against Chicago. And despite 7 runs being scored by Kansas City and 4 hits out of Jack Caglione, including 2 doubles, he didn't score a run. At least the Royals were not swept by the White Sox.
Yeah, Cags has as many hits yesterday than the Chicago White Sox as an entire team. Now, yesterday, I had my underdog play of the day. We have to pick a dog on the Pro Baseball Today show. It was the White Sox to complete that sweep. And I felt good after the first inning. Heck, after the first couple innings when you had the 2-run home run. But I kept checking the statistics late in the game. Like, wait a second. The only base hit that Chicago's going to get was the home run in the first inning. I don't think they got a base hit until like either the 8th or the 9th inning where they actually played it 3 runs, talking about the White Sox here. Good win here to try to avoid it. But Lorenzen was good yesterday. I didn't think he'd be that good. 6 hits, 1 hit, 2 earned runs. And that only hit he gave up again was the 2-run home run in the first inning here. So the White Sox comeback falls short here. You needed that for the Royals. You can't get swept. Come on now. You can't get swept by the White Sox. And they did.
No, you cannot, DRS. Not by any means. By the way, where's Jack Caglione in terms of the American League Rookie of the Year award chase? Still out there with Jacob Wilson for the Athletics. He is minus 600 right now. Caglione in his first week in MLB. 15-1, slightly longer now, DRS, than he was entering his MLB debut last week for KC. So the weekend that was in the bigs, the Dodgers avoid a sweep against the St. Louis Cardinals under the arch, and yet still remain those short World Series favorites, but back by about a dime, plus 250 the price on LA. Still double that number, but the Yankees getting shorter despite losing the weekend to the Red Sox at a 5-1 number, tied for third, Tigers and Mets at plus 950. The Phils round out the top five at a 10-1 price.
Yep, no surprise there. And again, teams like the Phillies on big losing streaks still at 10-1 because it's not as if you're grading them on how their performances are in early June. It's what you think those teams will be in the end of August, early September, and the end of September as they head towards the playoffs here. But the Dodgers, again, will be a favorite. Also, how about Clayton Kershaw yesterday? Poor start to the season. Really solid start yesterday. And also in conditions that weren't really conducive for a pitcher. 79, 80 degrees, wind blowing out. He goes five innings pitch, gives up the six hits. But how about this? Seven strikeouts and no walks. A guy that wasn't striking anybody out, now striking some guys out yesterday, picking up that victory.
Only a single earned run allowed by Clayton Kershaw as well in year number 18. DRS, he was not too pleased with what the Redbirds did before his start on the pregame video board showing Matt Adams hitting a homer off Kershaw back in the 2014 National League postseason after the game. Clayton Kershaw saying it was Bush League. It certainly invigorated him to go out there and throw a great outing. I have no issue with it.
Right?
A little bit of gamesmanship. I don't know. It did miff off Clayton Kershaw, though, and he went out there and dealt. So Kersh should be kind of happy he got pissed, went out there and absolutely shoved against St. Louis.
Yeah, it's like I go to an Eagles game. It's like, ooh, man, that was a big hit against Emmitt Smith. And Emmitt's like, that's disrespectful right there, showing me get tackled on the big screen. Stop. Come on now, Clayton. Yeah. So, by the way, St. Louis isn't drawing all that well at home now as compared to the past. Does anybody even care, even paid attention to that actual highlight there? But the Cardinals, by the way, having a better season than most thought, and they're only 36-29. But again, good start by Clayton Kershaw. Maybe he needed that motivation to snap back. But that's what I can't believe this should have highlighted me giving up a home run to a hometown. Yeah. Stop it. Stop.
36-29 for St. Louis, by the way, in second in the National League Central, still four back of the Cubbies, who are 40-25. St. Louis's win total, DRS, 75.5 entering 2025. They're well on their way to skying over that number, 36-29. They've been one of the pleasant surprises in Major League Baseball. But it's a very, very competitive National League where at the moment, the Redbirds would still miss out on the postseason by just about a half game in the National League. More TEL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The start of the Stanley Cup final has been unreal. Yes, it has been quite some time since we saw some action on the ice. But the opening two games of this 2025 Stanley Cup final, of course, a rematch of last year in 2024 between the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers, has absolutely delivered. Both games going to at least one overtime session. In game number two, saw two OTs in which Brad Marchand won it for Florida in that second OT with his second goal of the game. The trade deadline acquisition for the reigning champs after the first 16 years of his career, all with the Boston Bruins, he has delivered in a large and significant way for Florida. DRS, the Panthers take game number two up in Edmonton in that second overtime, winning 5-4. Brad Marchand scoring twice. That also included the 40-year-old Corey Perry scoring a goal to equalize in regulation with only 18 seconds left. What a start to the 2025 Cup Final we have seen between these very two familiar foes.
I love it. It's so, like, overtime hockey is fantastic. Playoff overtime hockey is even better. Stanley Cup final overtime hockey, does it get any better than that? And you just got back-to-back games to start the finals with overtime games where each team won one of those. So now it's not 2-0 going back. What could have been? It's 1-1 heading back to Florida in a rematch of what we saw last year in the Stanley Cup finals. And also, Ben, these aren't 1-0 games. It's like, oh, man, great goaltending. You are getting unbelievable scoring scoring opportunities from those talented players on the planet, and they are performing. This is exactly what hockey fans want, and it makes me angry as a Flyers fan that I don't get to enjoy this type of hockey in any realm, watching home playoff games in overtime and getting excited for the next game on deck, where I just have to watch from afar and be an Edmonton fan with a 3,500 miles or whatever from where I'm living at this point. But my goodness, if you can't enjoy hockey and watch these two teams play the type of brand of hockey they're playing, you just can never be a hockey fan at this point. It's been sensational and exceeding expectations through just two games.
DRS, we have said it a few times. If you have allegiances to any of these two franchises, the Panthers and the Oilers, I'm not sure how you have survived the first two games of this series without your heart rate absolutely skipping off the charts. But if you are just a casual hockey fan, a casual fan of sports who enjoys the best players, the best teams on the biggest stages, then what a treat the Stanley Cup Final has been so far. So the Panthers take back home ice advantage, winning 5-4 in two OTs in game number two. The Panthers, as we get ready for our first game in Sunrise DRS on this Monday, are now the slight favorites to win Lord Stanley's Cup, to keep it from Canada and to bring it back to Sunrise for a second consecutive year. Minus 115, now that outright Florida money line price to hoist the cup for a second consecutive season. Of course, Edmonton was an ever so slight minus 125 favorite entering this set, around a minus 225 price after winning game number one. Now, as we head back to Florida for game three tonight, the Panthers, that slight favorite.
Yeah, we had Chris Meany on with us last week, too. And was like, man, isn't this a great buy-in spot here for the Florida Panthers? Like, they lost one game. And then you're saying to yourself, like, oh, well, they're getting plus 185 or so now at this point. They can certainly win game number two. And if they do, you're going to get such a better price point than what you could have had. And then you see now the numbers where the Panthers are a slight favorite because they have home ice advantage back in their corner. And it's a minus 115 price. So now the question would be now is it a good time to buy in for the Edmonton Oilers? I don't think so. I just think it was a great buy-in point for the Panthers, even if they did lose game number two. You know, even saying, you know what, maybe they're getting 3-1 at this point, buy back in, because there's a legitimate chance that they can win both of those games back on their home ice, and you have a crazy good number moving forward at a series tied 2-2. We'll see, but this series has provided everything you need. It just, the fact of the matter is, I don't know if Edmonton I want to buy back in on just yet. Maybe it's like, okay, let Edmonton lose another game and say, all right, must win game number four. They're getting a great price now. Buy back on them. So I look at this and say, it's not a time necessarily to buy on Florida, but I don't want to buy on Edmonton with the same vibes that I really wanted to buy on Florida after game number one.
Here's what I want to buy, and here's what I am still hoping for. A Stanley Cup last year, of course, that went to seven games, but in a drastically different way. Florida opened up a 3-0 series lead. Edmonton fought all the way back to force that seventh game. This feels like we're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, DRS, to see the full distance. Seven games now is plus 125. It was plus 165 entering this series. Game three tonight in Sunrise. Florida, a minus 142 home money line favorite line, working a little bit to the Panthers. Total still 6.5. We have gone over in each of the first two, but in overtime. The coach, KY, here for the NBA Finals now.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Recapping game number two of the 2025 NBA Finals and where this series now stands, with two full days off before we change venue for the first time and head to Indianapolis for game three on a Wednesday. It is time now for the scouting report from the mind of our coach, J.Y. James Young, here bright and early on this Monday morning to recap the weekend and game number two of the NBA Finals between the Thunder and the Pacers. J.Y., thank you for being here. How was the watch party last night with old K-Dubs, Kevin Walsh?
it was quite fun. You know, note to self, Kevin gets a little excited when his bet cashes in the last minute. So it was a good time by all. I think the watch party was more fun than actually watching the game, because the game was a little bit of a snooze fest last night.
And that ticket did cash, walk it to the window over 227.5, 228.5, finishing with 200. and 30 total points late. Oklahoma City scoring more of them by a 16-point margin, 123-107. JY, we asked about the Thunder's resilience. What would their resolve be after coughing up game number one, leading by 9 points with 2 minutes and 39 seconds remaining in regulation? It's really been the story we have asked and the question we have all wondered about Oklahoma City, this young core, led by Mark Daigneault, the head coach, and now the MVP and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. How would they learn and gain that experience from these postseason lumps? What did OKC continue to prove to you last night with that 16-point win to tie the NBA Finals at a game all?
That even not at their best, they're the far superior team if they play 48 minutes of basketball. And that's something that Rick Carlisle's team forces you to do, Ben, obviously, coming back from game one to get the win and get up 1-0. So Mark Daigneault's team started out hot. I love them minus the 4.5 points. What I particularly liked is Chet Holmgren getting off to a good start. I think he had 9 points in the first quarter. Got him going early. Still not a fan of not going double big lineup, which they played in spots with Isaiah Hartenstein. But to me, it was a good performance out of Oklahoma City. And then it was roles, right, when guys got going. Obviously, it was Holmgren early, only 6 points for SGA in the first quarter. SGA goes to the bench at the beginning of the second quarter. Here comes Jalen Williams, who was scoreless in the first, gets 7 quick points in the second quarter. And then, obviously, the play, particularly the bench getting 38 points out of Alex Caruso and Aaron Wiggins. Really great performances. Their bench outplayed Indiana's bench. And the other key, like I said, is just playing throughout the game. You know, anytime that it was, an 18-point lead at the break, I don't think Bennett got below 12. So anytime they threw a punch, Indiana, timeout, Mark Daigneault, turn around, run back the other way by Oklahoma City.
Yeah, take a look. I mean, they were in a blender early. Talking about the Pacers, like, you take a look at the defensive prowess that we always talk about for OKC, coach. 20 points given up in the first quarter, 21 in the second, and it was a wrap from there, which is kind of odd, because if I told you before the game, watch the Pacers. 7 players will be in double digits. Like, wow, Pacers going back to Indiana up 2-0. That had to be a fantastic performance. Answer me this question, though, coach. Tyrese Haliburton, underwhelming in game number one. He does wind up with 17 points, but 5 points entering into the fourth quarter when the game was just about over already. What do the Pacers have to do to get Tyrese Haliburton going here for game number three and beyond?
Donnie, in the first quarter, it was more than just a slow start for, obviously, Tyrese Haliburton. It was Pascal Siakam, I think, only had 3 points at the end of the first quarter. So the two of them collectively did not play well to start the game. I thought I saw something, Donnie, in the fourth quarter. I'm going to be curious to see if it happens and it leads to game three. That's why the over 4.5 points for plus money first quarter for Tyrese Haliburton is so intriguing. They did what Tom Thibodeau did with Brunson. They took him off the ball at times. They played a little bit more of a two-point guard backcourt with T.J. McConnell at the point, Haliburton at the two. But then also, maybe you put Nembhard and let him bring the ball up the floor a little bit. Here's why. Tyrese is not the explosive guard where you can start the offense, get him into a high ball screen, he can create. Not with these guards, with Dort, with Caruso, with SG, bigger, physical, more guards. Get him on the run. You saw them run dribble drops, what we call dribble handoffs, into a ball screen. So if you get him on the run, maybe you can turn the corner. I saw a bunch of plays like that in the fourth quarter, wondering if that's what you will see Rick Carlisle go to in a game three. Get Tyrese Haliburton the ball on the move rather than stand still.
We'll talk more adjustments for Indiana as they head home for game three on Wednesday night in just a little bit. And if there is still optimism, maybe a glass half full perspective for the Pacers. For Oklahoma City, JY, this is what we expected, and it's what we anticipate night in, night out, out of the now NBA MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Game-high 34 points. He has scored a total of 72 in the first two games of this NBA Finals, the first two of his Finals career. But as you look up and down that stat board for all of the significant outcomes for OKC last night, was it the 34 points out of Gilgeous-Alexander, or did something else stand out to you to be even more key for the Thunder's victory last night?
Well, the Pacers are about the sum of their parts. And if you get 38 points and 9 out of 16 from Caruso and Wiggins, with those starters, you're not losing. I mean, you're not losing because I think the Oklahoma City has the advantage with the starting lineup. What you saw early on was a lot of dribble drive action by SGA, kickouts. SGA had 8 assists. Ben, he could have had 13 or 14 if they knocked down open shots, and he did not do so early in the game. Caruso was the guy that kind of got going in the second quarter along with Wiggins. Those two, the ability to knock down threes and offset the bench of Indiana is key. I just think that's the thing that makes Oklahoma City so interesting, because I said before the series started that I thought that Oklahoma City is everything that Indiana does, but better. Right? That includes the bench. If you get 38 points out of those guys, if you keep Hartenstein off the bench to get you 8 rebounds, diming people up with 4 assists, Isaiah Joe giving you some minutes defensively, didn't shoot the ball well, they have enough that if their second group can stay even or even a tiny bit ahead of Indiana in regards to their bench production, it's a wrap, because they have so much they can do better with their starting line being offensively diverse in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, 38 points off the bench between two players, absolutely stroking it from three-point range. That's fantastic. That's the expectations that you love to see, and particularly when you're on your home court. Now, things do change when you get onto the opponent's court of how some of those B-roll and C-roll players actually wind up there. But we do have extra time in the finals, Coach. We're not playing every other day here. The changes that need to be made, because the expectations for game number one were similar to what I expected for game number two. Oklahoma City's the better team. Eventually, they're going to impose their will. We weren't able to do that in game number one, a nice comeback from the Pacers, but now we sort of get back to level in games number two. Moving forward, are there some changes that you'd like to see between either one of these teams that, you know what, could make a big difference here?
Well, I think I want to see the double big lineup, because I think that was a reactionary by Mark Dagenal to go small. I still get concerned with Chet Holmgren getting himself in foul trouble, possibly being a 5. He benefits by being neck to Hartenstein. We also saw a couple of times that Oklahoma City did a lot during the regular season, Donnie. High pick and roll, short roll, which means instead of Hartenstein rolling away to the basket, you roll him to the elbow, and then you get a quick lob to Chet at the rim. That was something we saw a couple of times. We saw a lot during the regular season. I want to see that more out of Oklahoma City in regards to that double big lineup. In regards to Indiana, it's just they got to find a way to unlock Siakam and Halliburton earlier in the game. The way that they are so good offensively, I think it's extremely hard to come back on Oklahoma City. You got to stay close to the vest. You got to watch the runs. We used to have a sign, if you get scored on 3 straight possessions, burn a timeout. I don't care. You can't take them home after the game. So if you're Rick Carlisle, watch the runs, get the timeouts quicker, and try to keep the game as close as you can so you can steal it in the end. That's their recipe.
That is how the Pacers have done things on this run of the NBA Finals. We're in Indianapolis inside Gainbridge Fieldhouse on Wednesday night. 2 days from now, it will be the first NBA Finals game in Indy in 2.5 decades. We'll get you set for game 3, the adjustments that need to be made, and coaches' updated predictions for the remainder of this championship set, with a series tied at a game apiece. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Monday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. The NBA Finals is tied at a game apiece. Indiana steals game number one. OKC responds with a 16-point win in game number two. Our coach, J.Y. James Young, is still here. And J.Y., entering the NBA Finals between OKC and Indiana, your prediction? Thunder in 5 on Friday after game number one in Indiana's masterful comeback. I asked you for an updated prediction. You stuck to your guns and you still said Thunder in 5. Now with OKC equalizing last night and a minus 560 outright favorite to be crowned an NBA champion and hoist that Larry O'Brien trophy, what is the updated projection from you?
You know what? I think you're trying to bait me into a switch. I'm not switching. Thunder in 5. And the critical game will be game 3. And for Indiana, obviously that's why the spread is so low, 3.5. If they don't get game 3 on Wednesday, I think this can roll. Because to me, I just thought that they look comfortable, Oklahoma City, even though I don't think they played particularly great in spots in game number two. And obviously game number one, you saw them not take advantage of the turnovers. And I think that's my concern with Indiana. The turnovers and some of the passes, particularly out of Obi Toppin, as a coach, I'm literally like, oh, my Lord. Oh, what are we doing here at times? And that's a team that Oklahoma City will take advantage of that. So to me, I still like Oklahoma City in five games.
If we are looking at the numbers here, just on to win the series here, I do think there could be a little bit of an advantage here. The Pacers are a plus 410 price. I do think, Coach, like, I'm against the game five. I think it goes six, but I just think it's OKC. Could they win in a five? Yes. I think OKC is definitely winning the series, whether it be six and seven, which brings up my point here. OKC minus 550 right now on the price point to win the series. The Pacers at a plus 410 price. To me, and again, it's hard for the betting public to say, well, I'm going to put down $10 or $20 on a minus 550. What am I actually getting back? But I think there's a lot of value in that Thunder price point, because to me, Coach, I don't see any way, to be honest, even though we're sitting here 1-1 with home court advantage going back to the Pacers, that the Pacers actually win this series.
Well, listen, if you have the money to put up the minus 550, yeah, I would go for it. I agree with you with that sentiment. If you have enough of cash to put up in front for a week and a half, I would go ahead and do that. Because here's the thing, if the Thunder, or when the Thunder, I think, win in game three, that 560 is going to move. So this is the best price point you're going to get at minus 560 now. I agree with you. I don't think there's nothing that I saw in the first two games that tells me that Indiana's going to win this series, right? Usually when you get to this is what that's, you know, typical with the NBA, right? More times than not, 99 out of 100, the better team is going to win a seven-game series. It's different than when you get to a situation like hockey where you deal with a hot goalie, or you get to a couple of starting pitchers that can get rolling in a series. Usually the cream always rises to the top. It's come down because of its 1-1. So to me, if you have the money to take them now, take them now, because when they win game three, that number is obviously going to move.
We've also talked about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as the individual. His price basically matching that of his team to win hardware for SGA to be finals MVP minus 500. Again, if you're willing to play the chalk because you want to focus on the outright outcome after 34 in game two, 38 in game one, and OKC maybe winning this series rather quickly, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to win NBA finals MVP. But JY, we have hoped for a competitive series. Indiana did steal game number one on the road in OKC. The Pacers have been a sensational underdog throughout this postseason run. They are 8-4 outright. So for game number three on Wednesday, with Indiana getting 4.5 points, if this series is to even see a sixth game, what do the Pacers need to do in game three in the remainder of the way to make this competitive?
Their best players have to step up early and often. And that's why you're looking at that 4.5 for both Haliburton and Siakam in the first quarter. Aaron Naismith, who has become a lethal dagger shooter in the fourth quarter of these comebacks, may need to knock one of those two down early on in the game. And then you just got to hope that, Ben, that when you go on the road like Oklahoma City, that if you're Indiana's sake, you shoot better, your role guys play better at home. Then you got to hope that the role players from Oklahoma City play worse. So look at Nembhard. Look at Obi Toppin, who was fantastic in game one with five threes, was barely hitting the rim in game two and throwing the ball all around the gym. It's about a fast start by the starters, using your bench and relying on your home crowd to keep that game close and hope that momentum takes it. The only thing you look at Oklahoma City and say is because of the propensity and the way they've won games throughout the regular season and playoffs is if you get them in a tight spot, you could steal it. So if you're Rick Carlisle, you got to shorten that. And it's weird saying this because it's a team that runs. You got to shorten the game. So if you're going to play with pace, you got to make sure you win the rebounding battle like you did in game one. But you cannot turn the ball over. Win the shot attempts, win the rebounding battle, win the turnovers, and that should be a good enough recipe at home to try and steal game three.
be a lot of fun for this series if we see Indiana take game number three, and then you have a little bit of adversity there for OKC, must win in game number four for OKC. But if we are looking at the betting statistics here that Ben brought up earlier in the show, Coach, 95% of the money here on the spread on OKC, 74% of the bet on OKC. That line sits at 4.5. So the public overwhelming saying, you know what? I was laying 10.5 to 11.5 points before. Now I'm only laying 4.5. I'm ready to jump back in. Are you that way as well, where you would be comfortable with the 4.5 points for the Pacers? Or, like the public is telling you, what? This is going to be a blowout. I'll gladly lay the 4.5.
You know, listen to me. I'm actually going to play the game live because I think Indiana's going to try and throw the first punch and play with the lead. Oklahoma City's been known to be a second-half team when they get their run and they get you out of the way. So if I especially think Halliburton's going to go over 4.5 at plus money, if I think Siakam's going to go at 4.5 at a little bit of minus money, then I may take the first quarter plus the points just to win the quarter for Indiana and then jump on second quarter. Also, look at Jalen Williams' second quarter. SGA plays the whole first, and Williams sits a little bit, and the Williams starts the second quarter. Maybe also look at Jalen Williams' second quarter points once the second quarter begins.
Oklahoma City has been at least a 3-point favorite in all 18 games throughout the playoffs, but yet to cover on the road at that favored side. Other NBA questions for KY next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We might only have a few games left in the NBA Finals in the 2024-25 NBA season. We are hoping for a long championship series between the Pacers and the Thunder. But as you saw from the odds, and as JY's updated prediction still stands, OKC in five is the most likely and that shortest price. And JY, that means that NBA fans can often rejoice as they look forward to the drama in the summer, at times even more so than the games throughout a season. And a couple of big stars could just be on the move this summer and in the offseason. Let's start with Giannis Antetokounmpo and his team getting ousted by these Pacers in only five games in the opening round of the NBA playoffs. Of course, in the standoff with Papa Halliburton, John Halliburton, was that the last moment we see Giannis Antetokounmpo in a Bucks uniform? Courtesy of our Canadian friends at the FanDuel Sportsbook, we've got some next team odds, not just for Giannis, but for Kevin Durant. For Giannis, we start, JY, and the odds makers still expect for him to find his way back to Milwaukee. It's a minus 250 number. Do you agree with our Canadian friends at the FanDuel Sportsbook? Will Giannis Antetokounmpo be playing for the Bucks next season?
No, I don't think so. I think you're looking at possibly a full rebuild here in Milwaukee. I think the main reason, Ben, is because of the loss of Damian Lillard to the Achilles tear. That team's not going anywhere. And with Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, Brooke Lopez, they're old, let alone they got Doc Rivers coaching the team. So to me, it's a perfect opportunity to blow it up. Kind of start over with that franchise. It does present interesting options, obviously, with San Antonio with the number two pick. You could base that around probably getting someone like a Dylan Harper or Ace Bailey. But to me, the one team that looks more intriguing to me is honestly Houston. Because I think Houston has the depth and the young assets, and the fact that Giannis being younger than someone like a Kevin Durant, you can mix him in with maybe a Şengün and others and just have a longer, let's say, championship window. So to me, if I'm looking at a team possibly to get Giannis, I'm not looking at the Spurs. I'm actually looking at the Rockets.
Yeah, you take a look at Giannis, too, because you have to understand the franchise doesn't want to get rid of Giannis. Like, it's a market, it's a city that doesn't really have, hey, let me be that destination. I mean, damn, Dame Lillard was like, I'm going to Miami. They go, oh, you know, you're going to Milwaukee. He's like, I don't have anything to do but play video games and drive home after practice. It's boring here. So when I look at the destination cities, it's not one. You don't want to give that up. But in the NBA, Coach, we know one thing. Superstars rule the roost. If Giannis says he wants to leave, he will be traded. If Giannis says he wants to stay, he will be staying in Milwaukee. I do think it's interesting with some of the outlets, but let's also flip it over to another superstar coach that's out here. That's Kevin Durant. Where is he going to go? And I laugh at this. Like, the number one odds market here that we're taking a look at are the Rockets. You want Kevin Durant on a young Rockets team that's trying to learn right now? It's like the opposite place I want Kevin Durant to wind up. Number two will be the Suns. Again, back in his home city where he's already in. The next team up is the Spurs. Plus, I don't want him going anywhere near the Spurs. So, coach, when I look at Giannis going to a team, he can be a great addition here for the youngsters, for the veterans, and whoever. Kevin Durant, I don't think he makes much sense for a team that's rising to get to the next level. He has to go to a ready-made veteran team that he will say, I'm okay with not being the A1A athlete. And I don't know if he can do that.
Yeah, so that's why when you're looking at it, it's those teams in the 4 and 5 slot. And I think it's going to be a mistake. If he goes somewhere, it could be the Knicks. You look at the fact that the Knicks are going to make a move at some point in the offseason. The fact that Rich Kleiman is agent or representative, whatever he is always been trying to push him to New York. And the fact that he will go to Gotham does make a little bit of sense here, because if the Knicks want to change up the roster and get another bona fide sniper score and someone like Kevin Durant and a team that's in a short window, Minnesota could make some sense depending on what they're getting in return. I just don't see it with Houston or with the Spurs, because there are teams that are just going into their championship window in the next couple of years. They may not even be there yet, even though Houston overachieved. So to me, you're looking at Minnesota, you're looking at the Knicks, does Philadelphia try and blow it up and try and make a move and package a third pick and send them over to play for Donnie Wrightside in South Jersey and in Philadelphia? I'd rather have that.
Yep. 35 years old, that is Kevin Durant, about to enter year number 18 of his NBA career. Does he make right on the 3 years in Brooklyn and head across the East River to Manhattan to play inside the world's most famous arena? Now that would be something. It should be noted that both Giannis and KD under contract through this upcoming season of 2025-26, both guys would have to be traded for this offseason. They are not free agents. Giannis, in fact, under contract through 2027-28. He does have a player option for that season. JY, we appreciate it as always, my friend. A fadeaway to the break to end out this second hour, and hour number 3 comes way up next.